Esto es
Interfaz. Un podcast de arquitectura de software, desarrollo, nuevas tecnologías y soft skills. Bienvenidos.
Hey friends, this is Rodrigo Diaz for another episode of Interfaz. Interfaz is a podcast about software architecture, development, new technologies and soft skills, and I'm very proud to introduce Soiner Tejada, who is the CEO and founder of Solliance, and he is a Microsoft MVP in Azure and Data Platform, and he is also a regional director. So I'm very proud to have you here, man.
It's really an honor to be here, Rodrigo.
How
thank
are you?
You so much.
Oh, thank you for your time. And before we go into technical details, please tell us more about yourself.
Absolutely. So I think you teed it off nicely, right? My passion is a lot in the cloud big data space. And of late, all the interest is in AI, because if you start to think about the problem we have is there's so much data, we as humans can't even begin to process it.
Yeah.
We need the help of the machines, and they need to learn on their own how to process it for us.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've written a bunch of books on Azure. I write books not only on the technical side of it, but also on the business side. Like, how do you build successful consulting practices in this space, right?
Yeah.
So I'm very passionate about the business of software, and that's part of what brings me here.
Yeah, nice. So you wrote three books, right?
I wrote three books on Azure, as well as a handful of playbooks that you may have seen from Microsoft Partners.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, on building successful practices.
Yeah. Okay, so you're here in Medellin for the .NET Conf 2017, and you did this workshop about machine learning and AI. What was it?
Exactly. So I called that talk AI, artificial intelligence for the pragmatic developer or for the impatient developer, which let's be real. Right?
Okay.
Every developer is very excited about AI, right? The potential they've seen already, but it seems like there's a lot to learn and they just want to get their hands dirty. I want to help them.
Yeah, okay, okay. So, you know, I often hear this confusion about machine learning and artificial intelligence and deep learning as well. What are the difference between those three terms?
So machine learning is basically the center of it all, right? And it boils down to enabling the computer to do things for you without having to be explicitly programmed for that task, right? In other words, you've taught it how to do a thing and it's inferred, it's extrapolated how to get the following tasks done, right? So think of the example I like to give there is like being a student in school, right? Mm-hmm. The beginning during the semester, during the course, right?
Yeah.
The teacher is giving you examples, working them through with you, and showing you here's the question, here's the correct answer, right? And you work through a bunch of those, right, throughout the year. And then you come to the final exam, and they give you new questions, but guess what? Mm-hmm. You have to provide the answers.
Yeah.
That's the gist of machine learning,
right? Okay.
And so if you build on that, right, we'll go up to what artificial intelligence is, because it's kind of like the umbrella term that has machine learning, right? A lot of artificial intelligence leverages multiple machine learning algorithms, right, in its process to accomplish whatever it is you want to do. And the idea, again, boils down to the fact that you're not explicitly programming the intelligence to do the thing that you're after. Now, you also asked about deep learning.
Yeah.
Right? And you can think of that as going down now two levels, right? And so deep learning is kind of like the subset or parallel set, it just depends which data scientist you talk to, of whether it's related to machine learning that takes a different approach to learning, right? And it uses different algorithms and it's theoretically based on the way the human mind works. Substantially, it's not,
Yeah,
at the end of the day.
Of course,
But the idea is the same, right? You are teaching an algorithm and it's reconstituting its internal parameters, it's recalculating its internal parameters to basically be able to provide the predictive capabilities you showed it, right? You showed it the answers, it figures out how to get to them.
Okay, okay, so of course, for doing machine learning, you have to have a lot of data, right? You have to have an input, you have to have maybe, I don't know, numeric data, or you have to have images or sounds, or I don't know, what is the input there?
So, great question. The input is generally tabular, right? It's usually rows and columns.
Okay.
They call them features and examples, or features being the columns, examples being the rows,
Yeah.
Right? So from that perspective, immediately familiar to most developers, mm-hmm. right? How much data you need, that varies based on the algorithm and the type of quality of the data that you have, et cetera. There's a lot of factors that affect that. Mm-hmm. But for instance, the hello world mm-hmm. of data science and machine learning is one called iris classification, right?
Okay.
And it's
okay.
one very simple one. There's three different types of these flowers called iris,
okay.
different species, right?
Okay.
And given the dimensions of the flower, mm-hmm. you predict what the species is. That's that's the hello world of data
okay,
science.
That's the hello
and,
world.
And
okay.
it's a great example to your question on size of data, because it only needs 150 examples or 150 rows, which
only
is tiny,
three.
It's uh-huh. nothing, mm-hmm. right? To be able to predict with great accuracy the species of the
flower. Of course, the more data you have, the best results you're going to have, right?
Generally, that's true.
Yeah, yep. yeah. And that's where some products like, I don't know, Hadoop or all the big data products come into the picture, because you have to have this huge amount of data, right?
Correct. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you imagine the case of like fraud detection for credit card systems,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Exactly.
They have terabytes of data that they need to, because these thieves are clever,
mm-hmm.
right? So you actually want as much data as you possibly can to train the model accurately, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one area where you move from training as a data scientist on just your local machine mm-hmm. to training on a giant cluster, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, yeah.
And extracting the result from
yeah.
from
And the other thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, sometimes we hear machine learning and artificial intelligence and we think, oh, he has to have a mathematician degree or he has to be a crazy scientist
right.
living in a lab, right?
Right.
So, but really, what do you need to know to do machine learning?
So the first thing I'd start with is, as developers, we should feel empowered to jump into AI. Because
yeah.
there's a lot that we can do in AI without even touching the model, without touching the math.
Okay.
Right? And I'll start there. And this is sort of me getting on my soapbox for 30 seconds. And you see, it's sort of in 2010, there was this big argument from data scientists coming on from on high
mm-hmm.
who said, hey, if you don't come at this from a PhD mathematics background,
yeah.
right, danger zone.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't accept that, because how many developers do you know that aren't good at math? Right? The math, you have to learn the math. I'm not saying there's something you don't have to learn, but we are certainly capable of learning the math required for pragmatic applications of AI. But in this Venn diagram, right, overlaps with computer science and domain knowledge, right? Because it turns out having an understanding of the problem space is very important to how you interpret the data and how you train the model and ultimately the quality of your model and your ability to evaluate your model afterwards.
Yeah,
like, does this make sense?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
it's saying, right?
Exactly.
If you don't know the domain, it's useless, right?
Exactly.
So you really need a balance of all three things, which kind of brings me to the next point about
mm-hmm,
it is
mm-hmm.
developers shouldn't shy away from it because they don't have a particular strength in one of those areas.
Yeah.
Because AI is the realm of the team,
mm-hmm.
right? The important part is to find the team and complement the skills, right?
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
yeah.
So that as a team, you have the data science.
Yeah, skills. Yeah, yeah. It makes sense because it's very difficult to find this crazy PhD mathematician that, you know, you want it to be on your team. So the team has to be balanced.
Correct.
Right? In those three topics that you mentioned.
And worse off, there's a shortage of data scientists.
Yeah, yeah,
and we will
exactly.
never catch up
in
our lifetimes, at least as far as the predictions go, with the supply of data scientists. So what can we do? Encourage the developers to learn
enough
of the data science so they can participate.
Yeah, and so developers can know that there is these products and services from Microsoft that allows them to, you know, to do a lot of very wonderful and amazing things with data and do machine learning without, you know, having the mathematician degree, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, and it starts simple, right? Because you don't always have to train a model to use machine learning. That's the thing where I think developers immediately hit a wall, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And Microsoft has these 30 odd services in Microsoft Cognitive Services, right?
Yeah.
All you do is integrate an API and you benefit from the hard work being already done.
Yeah, exactly.
But the value and the quality of the applications you can create is just as amazing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And what is the development process? I mean, you start from where? From zero to 100? How do you start?
it's a fair question, right? And normally I map this to the traditional data science pipeline.
Okay.
Right? Which this is assuming we're not using cognitive services. We actually want to use our own model. Yeah. How do we do this? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, we need the data. So first things first, we need to collect the data. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've collected it from various sources. As developers, that's writing code. It's stuff we know how to do. It's querying data stores, exactly. Et cetera. The next piece is preparing that data, right? It's going to be dirty. It's not going to integrate well. We have to fix it up. We have to sometimes find the information that's most predictive, what's strongest and most informative to the model we're trying to build. Mm-hmm. Extract that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's the preparation phase. Then the third phase is we have to train the model, mm-hmm. right? So this is where we show mm-hmm. the algorithm effectively, all of this data with the inputs and the predictions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And once the model is trained, then we have to realize is like we have to evaluate it. Just like we would perf test, you know, any regular application to see if it performs well. We perf test out the outputs of the model. Mm-hmm. And what we want to look at is how well does it do? Simple example, does my model do better than random, like than a coin toss? Mm-hmm. If it's worse than a coin toss, I have a pretty crappy model.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah,
and so there are ways to measure that. Again, there's APIs and libraries you use for that. So it takes a little math, but it's not as much as you would think, right? Because you're doing the stuff that you've already done as an engineer mm-hmm. before in other projects.
Yeah.
And then once you've evaluated your model, you're happy with it, then you deploy it. Mm-hmm. And the way that deployment works today really takes on two different flavors. One of which is it's embedded with the application. Mm-hmm. So like on the iPhone, for instance, on the new versions, right? Mm-hmm. You can embed ML with your app, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It can load the ML file directly and do predictions against that model.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool. Mm-hmm. But more commonly what we're seeing is you deploy a RESTful API, mm-hmm. right, as a web service, mm-hmm. and then your application calls that for prediction. Mm-hmm. And these predictions, you know, are intended to be very fast functions, right? Mm-hmm. You know, millisecond delay. Mostly the delay it takes in network traffic, less so the computation on doing the prediction.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that pans out typically is you deploy Docker containers. Mm-hmm. So the beauty of that is, you know, these models are basically just serialized coefficients.
And the models are just files, right?
They're just binary files. You can think of a serialized coefficients as some big equation the algorithm figured out, right? And so they have dependencies though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to have the DLLs, think of it, or the libraries that have to know how to read this model and apply the model to do a prediction, et cetera. So it makes a lot of sense to package all of these things up into a container, mm-hmm. and then you just move the container wherever you want to put it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And what about Azure Stack? How is it related with this machine learning model? Can I use Azure Stack on premises and put the model there and
fantastic. So where this is headed, right, is you have the Docker container image,
mm-hmm.
and you can run this container image wherever you can run a Docker container.
Yeah, exactly. So what about Azure? How can we do ML on Azure? I mean, what are the products, what are the services that are available today for machine learning?
So the main one that I think is really awesome is just announced about a month ago, mm-hmm. is the new feature set around Azure Machine Learning. So we've had Azure Machine Learning for a few years now, mm-hmm. right? In the sense of that it was the Azure Machine Learning Studio, that product. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They've really evolved that, listening to the needs of the data scientists community, to the needs of the DevOps folks who need to deploy these models in production and at scale,
mm-hmm.
and really came up with a very comprehensive solution mm-hmm. that uses the Docker containers to deploy, but also provides all of the tooling for creating
mm-hmm.
these models.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now you're not just left with like having to cobble together all these open source tools.
Mm-hmm.
There's a nice package called the Azure Machine Learning Workbench that mm-hmm. is the thing you install on your local machine,
okay.
right? And it helps you do the experimentation, helps you create the model, helps you even clean the data if you want it to. It has
very
powerful capabilities
for
data wrangling. It even uses AI to do the data wrangling, to help you with the data wrangling, which is super cool, right? And then helps you with deploying that as a container, you know, and running it up either on your local machine or in Azure.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of it is, if, you know, I've had some folks ask me, hey, my frustrations in doing machine learning have been I always connected to this remote system somewhere and I kept getting disconnected and it would lose all my state.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to learn first and do it, right? So use the workbench, run it locally. You don't have to do all
connected.
Your stuff in Azure. Only thing that the workbench connects to Azure for is, for the most part, exchanging telemetry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Keeping tabs on your executions of your experiments and their performance and stuff like that.
Okay.
But your experimentation, where you're training the model and evaluating its performance, can all happen on your local machine.
On your local machine. So so you mentioned this workbench. About the development environment, what else? You have to have a workbench is one of the tools. What else?
So typically one of the two other places where you actually write the code, because the workbench, you think of it as the environment in which you're, you know, maintaining all of this process.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
If you're going to write the code, you're either using Visual Studio Code,
yeah,
most commonly, because the language d'azur is Python, right?
Okay.
For this machine learning. So you're using Python inside of Visual Studio Code, mm-hmm. And then opening up that same project in the workbench. Mm-hmm.
So that's the other knowledge that you have to have is Python. You have to be a Python developer.
Yep, exactly. And this is the one that, you know, every time I give a talk, mm-hmm. I ask, how many of you program in C# or .NET, right?
Everybody,
everyone.
Yeah.
How many of you program in Python? Like 10% of the room right now.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that in the next year, we see that dramatically improve, right? Python has established itself as a pretty compelling language, not just for AI, not just mm-hmm. for machine learning. And that's because all the libraries, right, mm-hmm. academia and R&D have been made available open mm-hmm. source, but also in the entire spectrum of the DevOps that you need, right? So mm-hmm. the automation of the cloud systems, the deployment, the packaging, yeah. all of that stuff being yeah. easy to do inside of Python.
And it's not that difficult, right? It's not that you're learning, I don't know, another esoteric language?
It's not Lisp.
So, okay, we have this last question in this podcast, the signature question. Are you ready to?
I'm ready.
If we opened your backpack, what we're going to find?
You're ready for this one? You would find a bag of ketones. Because I'm on the ketogenic diet,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're right.
And so basically, the way I sort of defer my eating for throughout the day is to have some ketones that I can rely on.
Ketones,
right?
Are these envelopes with some...
Yeah, basically the broken down fats,
yeah,
right,
okay.
which is the source of energy. And so I have a packet you drop in water and voila, I have energy for the day when you're at a conference and all they're serving is bread.
Exactly. Okay, cool. Well, man, thank you for your time and thank you for this episode of Interface.
It was awesome to be here.
It's been a pleasure to have you here. I really mean it. And thank you for listening to Interface and see you on the next episode.
Los esperamos en la siguiente emisión de Interface. Hasta la próxima.